obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
My name's Jeremy. I'm an alcoholic. Rich asked me before, and he goes, how do you want me to introduce you? And I said, I don't know, just get my name right. I don't. And then she got introduced, like, with tissues and tears, greatest woman of Alcoholics Anonymous and Jesus and steps. And I said, yeah, Rich, say something like that. And he pulls out paper and he has some. I want to thank you for asking me. He actually asked me to find someone else, and I didn't. So then he asked me to come out here and speak. So I'm the second choice. But that's all right. It was never anybody's choice in the past, so that's a move up to number two. I got loaded out here. This is where I'm from, so it's actually really nice. I came here probably 10 years ago to this roundup, and I just kind of ran in with some friends. We were going to go to a meeting, and then we ran out. I didn't spend much of the weekend here. But I grew up here. You know, I was born at, Torrance Memorial or Little Company of Mary, one of the two. And I've lived all over the South Bay. You know, I lived in Torrance, San Pedro, Long Beach, Gardena, Lomita, if I didn't say that, Palos Verdes. I've lived all over this place, you know, so I know it well, and I've gotten loaded well. I've robbed a lot of stores here well, and it's nice to be back, and I don't know, it's just good. I lived here about 10 years ago for a couple years. I had a family. I was getting real sick and was dying, so I uprooted my life. I moved out here to help out with that, with the family that was going to be taking care of him, and then he passed away, like, 6 weeks later, and I was like, well, shit, I already moved. I might as well stay. So I went to the Hermosa Beach Lotto Club. I liked the meetings there. I identified that place as my home group for those 3 years that I lived here. And it's just good to be back in this capacity. My sobriety date's October 7th, 1996. And that's pretty good for a guy who planned on drinking when he was going to get done with all his core stuff. You know, I absolutely intended on drinking again. I had no desire whatsoever to not drink. You know, you stick a needle in your arm, you can pretty much cut through the shit. You're an addict. You know, you snort coke, you steal for stuff. You know, you smoke crack or whatever. Sherm's a good one. Not much denial in Sherm. And drinking comes with, you know, weed and drinking come with a good bag of denial. You can really just deny it. People in society will just co-sign that denial left and right. You know, commercials come on TV to co-sign that. So that was something I wasn't going to give up. The drugs and everything, by the time I got to a treatment center, I had 6 months clean and sober. I'd put on a little bit of weight. I think I was up to like 135. And I was sleeping again, kind of, you know, and I was eating a little bit. And I was kind of, well, this kind of feels okay. I can maybe not do drugs for a little bit. Like, I just thought it was going to be that easy. I'll just not do drugs for a little bit. But drinking, hell no. As soon as I'm done with this, I'm going back to that. You know, I was 17 years old. When I got sober, and I just didn't imagine not drinking, you know, certain things like turning 21 or just whatever, you know, turning 18, you know, I just didn't imagine not drinking again. And I probably had about 2 weeks to go before I got out of this treatment center, so that put me about 10 months sober before it dawned on me that maybe I should take a look at this daily compulsive thought that I've had about drinking every single day of my now 10 months of sobriety, that maybe that's a problem. You know, I remember standing in my room at this rehab. It wasn't a very nice rehab, nice county run. Everybody was either from prison or on the way to, or both. And I remember standing in my room and my head said, you've been thinking about drinking every day. Maybe you're an alcoholic. And I thought, shit. You know, we had admitted to our innermost self that we were alcoholics. And I thought, oh my God, my innermost self just admitted to me that I'm an alcoholic. Shit, I haven't paid attention. What do I do? I've done everything. How you doing? Yes, uh-huh. Share? Sure, I'll share. Sure, I'll read. Yes, greed. You know, whatever. I'll do all this stuff. Work the house steps. 1, 2, 3. Blah, blah, blah. Write it down. Yeah, I did drugs. I drank. Blah, blah. Sure, here it is. Great. I didn't think it was real. You know, I didn't pay attention. I didn't care. I just did it because I figured, if I didn't do it, the treatment center was going to tell my PO and I'd get violated. And then they told me to get a sponsor, so I got a sponsor. My sponsor told me to do stuff, and so I did what he told me to do because I figured if I didn't, he would tell my PO and I'd get violated. I did everything out of complete stupidity, but I did it in the manner in which I was asked to do it. And later in sobriety, I was able to look back after reading some things out of the 12 and 12 about adopting a new form of actions and attitudes. And I thought, God, that's probably the only thing I actually did. I was grateful to get released, you know, from a 7-year term to go to a rehab, even if it was an Indio. You know, I was grateful. So I was happy to be there. I learned everybody's name. People go, man, you were here for like a year or longer, weren't you? Nope. It just felt like that, because as soon as I got there, I thought, all right, stop being a jerk. Don't be mean to people. Learn their names. Be polite. They'll kick you out if you're not, you know. And so they just thought I'd live there forever because I was running around. You know, I washed the dishes. You know, I swept the floor. I did everything. And that's the only thing I can contribute to my sobriety, is that I took a new form of attitude and a new action. And my previous attitude and actions was screw you, screw everything. I don't care. I'm going to die loaded, most likely alone. I don't care. Acceptance was the answer to all my problems, was something I figured out in my disease. I didn't know there was another. I never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous or any other fancy something A. I never heard of anything. Never. Never heard of treatment. Nothing. So I just figured that's how it is. People like me, we drink and we use. We come from a family that drinks and use. If I ever meet a woman, she's going to drink and use, and we're going to have kids, and those kids, we're going to drink and use with those kids, and then we're all going to die. You know, that's pretty much how it's going to go. Why not? Why would my life be any different than the lives of the people around me, you know? And so finding out that, you know, all this, you know, it was a lot to take in. I didn't really care for it. But let me get back to that point of why I ended up in that treatment center. When I was living in Lomita, on 253rd Place, and my stepdad, dad number two, he was gonna hit me or something for, I think I wanted pizza. It was late at night, and him and my mom were fighting about still haven't had dinner or anything like that. And I said, let's just order pizza, right? I'm 7. Pizza sounds good to a 7-year-old. He lost his shit about that, you know, because that's the dude that like, drinks those green drinks and wants a salad all the time. And so me wanting pizza just didn't sit right with his way of life. And he was mad or whatever. And I figured he was going to hit me, so I took off and I ran out. And while I was out on the streets that night, I felt safe. Safer than I did at home. I felt free. I just felt different. I was also 7 and I got hungry, so I went back because I had no idea what to do. You know, I didn't have any street skills yet. I wasn't that gangster. And so I went back, and I remembered that, though. I remembered that I felt safer out there than I did at home. And so I didn't want to be at home anymore. And I pretty much didn't live at home for maybe a total of about a year and a half of my life. I lived at home. I lived with other family members and other people, running away all the time. When I was 9 years old, well, at 7 years old, my grandfather died. My grandfather had Parkinson's, and he it's bad if you know what Parkinson's is. A lot of shaking, you know, losing your motor skills. Can't really speak much. Can't walk. Can't really stand his own will. Wheelchair bound, and oftentimes in the corner. And I, being a young kid when he had this, I was often just put on his lap and put in the corner as well. And so, for whatever reason, I don't think him and I ever. My bond to him was probably not as great as his bond to me, right? He probably, whatever, I don't even know if he knew who I was at that point in time. But for whatever reason, I felt like I got put in the corner, you got put in the corner, we're going to hang tough, it's cool, man. You know, I was a little kid, and Grandpa's cool, except for the one time that I thought he was going to eat me. But other than that, me and him were tough. And then he died, and I felt, that's it. The only other human on this planet that I felt connected to for being just put in the corner is dead, and I'm alone now. And I remember being that, 7 years old, coming home from Eshelman Avenue School, being told that he's dead. I just remember that was the moment that I was alone on this planet. You know, that's a heavy, heavy bag for a 7-year old. And so about 9 years old, I took a pull off some booze. I didn't know what it was. I wasn't like any of this crazy stories of anything. It's just I knew that alcohol was something these people drank. Adults drank it. My grandfather was an executive at Hollywood Park Racetrack. People came over and they had parties and stuff when he was well. And they would, you know, people would always bring these things. And, you know, the guys had nice cars and they had pretty girls and fur coats and jewelry. And they always brought this. And my grandmother and my grandfather didn't drink. And they would just go open this cupboard. So this cupboard was deep, man. It was stacked with booze. And I just associated to that grown-up lifestyle to that drink. I didn't know what it was. It's just drink. It's just liquid, you know, at that age. And so anyway, there was some left out. Somebody was pouring. They were taking a drink, and it was left there. And I took a pull. It burned. I spit it out. My nose felt like it was on fire, and I didn't really shook it off. And so I, you know, muscled down a second shot, and that one stayed down. And that's it. That's all I did. I took those two pulls. But whatever it is, that scared aloneness just went away. You know, and I'm pretty sure most people in this room relate to that moment. That scared, alone, tiny, ugly, fat, skinny, stupid, too smart, whatever it is. All that fear that we live with, and my insides don't look like your outsides. All that kind of went away for a minute, and I knew that I wanted to do it again. And that's usually how I define, one of the ways I define alcoholism, is not necessarily how much you drank, you know, what you were drinking, you know, what you did afterwards. But from that moment on, my brain went to, when's the next one? When can I do that again? That's it. And that's an alcoholic to me, is how I act in between drinks. You know, how I act in between drinks is inappropriate. I am inappropriate in between drinks and drugs. I'm a happy fall down drunk. It's easy. Once I'm loaded, that's it. I'm not gonna go far. I'm done. I love to be that person. In a corner. Other speaker, Earl H., always said, just down and out in a corner checking my pulse. That's how I want to be. And I said, oh, he nailed it. That's how I live. That's how I want to be. You know, just good, back out, drinks or whatever. Done. I don't want to experience. See, a lot of people relate to not wanting to feel sadness and depression and all that self-hatred kind of stuff that we grow. But I also didn't want to feel happiness and joy and excitement and all that stuff. Nothing was real. I wanted to feel nothing. And so that's how I wanted to be. I wanted to get to a point where I fall down, boom, and there we are. See you tomorrow, you know. And anyway, so that's it. How I act in between, though, is I'm going to lie to you. I'm going to steal from you. I'm going to manipulate you. I'm going to stand you up. I'm not going to show up to things that are important to you, because that is going to get in the way. Unless what's important to you is getting loaded, there's a good chance I ain't coming. You know, that's just how it is. And at a very early age, bouncing between homes and living with different people, my accountability was zero. And that is an amazing tool for a young alcoholic, to have no accountability. You know, I can get to do whatever I want. You know, tell this family member I'm staying at that family member. This family member I'm at that family member. And I'm gone for the weekend, you know, at 11. And unfortunately, other 11-year-olds don't do that. So my friends were usually older. And I started getting into other stuff. So I drank and I used. And one of the things I like to share to anybody, especially newcomers, is the first time I drank, that experience at 9 years old. You know, in school health class, you hear, you know, Red Asphalt or Reefer Madness. You ever seen that fantastic movie? It's worth watching, even sober. And it's horrible. If you take a drink, man, you're going to go to jail. You're going to die. You're going to kill your friends. You smoke weed, you're going to dance, and then shoot the bitch. You know what I mean? That's what they teach you. That's Reefer Madness right there in a nutshell. Smoking some weed, dancing with some chick, and then, oh, now I'm crazy, and boom, shoots her. That didn't happen. So you're a liar. You are another adult, authorities, you're a liar. You lied to me. It was great. The first time I took a drink, I felt good. The first time I smoked weed was fantastic. I rode my skateboard from San Pedro to Torrance. The first time I smoked weed, it was awesome. You know? So you're a liar. This is good. You're trying to keep it from me, and I'm going to do this all the time. You know, when's the next one? When's the next one? And that's what I did. I better keep track of what's going on here. All right, so nothing bad happened, okay? I didn't commit any crimes. I mean, you do. Drinking underage is a crime. Buying drugs is a crime. But, you know, real crimes. Didn't commit any real crimes. No felonies. Nobody went to jail. Nobody died. But the last time I drank, all those things happened. All those things happened the last time I drank and used. Every one of them. And nobody cared, because that's life now. 10 years later, that's just how life was. 10 years later, that's normal. You know, committing felonies, somebody going to jail, me, juvenile hall, whatever it is, that's normal. That's just normal stuff. Somebody dies, normal now. First time, sad. First time, shocking. Second time, not so much. Repeat the process over and over again. It's just not that surprising anymore. You know, it's sad, but we get used to that insanity. We get used to that just unpleasant lifestyle. And sobriety is funny, because when you get sober, life is still that way, and yet you hear this message of hope and all this stuff, and the truth is we're not used to it. We're not used to that lifestyle. We're used to the crappy one. Now, had the first time I took a drink, all that stuff happened, I never would have drank again. Would have scared the crap out of me. 9 years old, you know, take a drink and like, ah, shoot the bitch. And I was like, holy crap. And I would have been like, don't ever drink again on the corner. I would have, you know, we probably, everybody in here, don't do it, buddy. Don't ever take a drink. Everything they said is true, you know, but it's not. But the last time, you know, that's just the way it is. It gets like that. The first time I didn't drink, I didn't get a great job and a wife and a white picket fence house and a bunch of money and a car. I didn't get any of that stuff. I got me. Uncomfortable, don't know how to live, when's my next drink and drug, me, you know, and I didn't know how to do it. See, the fire was on October 7th, 1996, and I had to wait till it cooled off, you know. And, you know, that story about if you put a frog in water and you turn it on and it slowly boils, he'll get acclimated. It's not a true story, it's totally fake. You can Wikipedia that. But that's the thing we all know, right? The frog will sit there and die, boil to death, because it'll just acclimate to the water getting hotter and hotter and hotter over time, and we'll just sit there. Well, that's an alcoholic. That's what we do. We take a drink, boom. Pilot light's lit, gas is on, the water's getting hotter, but it takes time, you know, and we sit there and we sit there and we get used to it, and we're sitting there boiling water and we have absolutely no idea that we're ready to die. Any second now we're gonna die. You know, another speaker, great speaker, talks about seconds and inches. You know, and we all live that way. We all live seconds and inches from prison forever, death. You know, we all live that way. And we don't know it because we got used to it over time. You know, and the problem is when you stop taking a drink, you stop taking a drug, they turn it off. They don't take the water out and put in ice cold water and everything's hunky-dory again like it was when you were a child. They just turn it off. And the water has to slowly cool down, and we have to get used to that. See, I don't know how to go to work. So I was unemployable. I was given, my buddy worked at Mulligan's Family Fun Center at the golf driving range. He gave me that job 3 times. All I had to do was show up at 10 a.m. and fill out the paperwork. All 3 times I was too drunk by 10 a.m. to fill out the paperwork. Couldn't get it. I couldn't stay sober till 10 a.m. 3 times to get a job that I probably could have done drunk. Couldn't do it. You know, which is funny because that was the first job I got at a treatment center, because my PO said, get a job by Wednesday or I'm going to violate you. I went, all right. Right back down to see Julio. Julio, I need a job. This time I'm going to do it. And I got it. And I had to pick up golf balls at that driving range for months with no cart. No cart. And you know how people like to hit the ball at the cart? They like to hit it at the guy without the cart too, you know? So I'm out there getting smacked. And a strange knowledge, fun fact, it hurts more after they bounce than if you get caught in the air. Fun fact for you there. I don't know why it is. The insides are different or whatever. You hear it skip, you cringe, you turn. Oh, it's bad. It's just true. Take it in the neck. Oh, it's bad. I took golf clubs out one time and I would hit them back at the people. And my boss said, are you hitting golf? I said, no, go out there and cheat. And she wouldn't go out there because she knew she could hit with golf balls. And she went out there, so I got away with it. But I worked there until my PO said I could move back to Indio, because I knew I wasn't going to make it out here. So anyway, so I got picked up October 7, 1996. A couple gentlemen came to my house. They explained to me some of the things that I was doing weren't appropriate. And, you know, they ran down a different way of life that I never heard of. And they invited me to go along with them. And I went with them. And I embarked on this journey of sobriety, which is not true at all. The Lomita sheriffs came to my house and arrested me for a bunch of stuff. And it started off real bad. And I was called a lot of things. It's funny, I got called 3 things by this judge. One was incorrigible. That didn't sound so bad. I don't even know what that means at that time. That's whatever. That's fine. I later found out that basically means broke and cannot be fixed, which summed it up pretty good, except he was wrong. He also told me that I was an enemy of the state and a traitor to my country. And he said it in front of everybody. Son of a bitch, told in front of everybody. I knew that, he knew that. Everybody else in there didn't need to know that, but he told me that and a bunch of things. And I got a plea for 7 years. I plead to lesser charges for 7 years, and I was doing that, and I was doing the 6 month county time, and then I got released, I don't know, by a member of H&I, basically. A member of H&I stepped in, and he called this place out in Indio, said there's this kid, he's just an alcoholic and an addict, and he doesn't need to be sitting locked away forever. He needs a second chance. He needs to know what this is all about. And the judge went for it. So I got to go to this place out called the ABC Recovery Center. That's what it's called now. It was just the ABC Club back when I was there. There was no counseling. There was no nothing. Nothing special. He lived up top of the kitchen. And in the kitchen, there was 3 meetings a day, morning, noon, and night. That's it. There's 3 meetings a day, and you had to go to it. If you didn't show up, you got kicked out. And then you got some chores. Sweep the floor, get kicked out. Mop the floor, or get kicked out. Don't hang out with the women inappropriately, get kicked out. It was very cut and dry. There was no, like, we want to talk to you about your behaviors, we're concerned. We don't think that you're fully, blah, 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 blah. No, none of that. These are the rules, break them once. If I think you broke them once, I'll kick you out. You know, so everybody had to do it. And every Tuesday there was a meeting called the Pack Your Shit Meeting. Mary Helen's sitting here. She's from the desert. At least I think you're still living there. So you remember that meeting. And that's it. He just went through roll call. I swear to God, it was the craziest thing. I worked in a treatment center. I couldn't imagine operating that way today. I don't know how the hell he got away with it. But you know what? He saved everybody's life. Everybody was going to prison for a long, long time. And this man, who's no longer there, would walk into a courtroom before it was open. I don't know how you get in there before it's open. Even the dudes in chains aren't in before it's open. You know, you're waiting. And he would walk in and they would say, Danny, there's a couple gentlemen that are coming up later today. These are their stuff. They're going to go away for a long time. And he'd say, I'll take them. And they'd say, okay, great. They pull you out and say, guess what? You're going with him today. And you're like, I'm going with him today. What the hell? You know? And off you went to this rehab. I don't know how he got that kind of authority. I don't know how he got that kind of respect. I do now. I didn't know how he had it then, you know, and that's how it went. And that's the guy I did. Said the same thing. I'll take him. Judge said, fine. And off I went. Like I said, I did what I was supposed to do. I got the sponsor. I worked the house steps. I went on, and I did it out of complete stupidity. I got released back to come out here, and, oh, wait, sorry. I have to back up. She's looking at me. All right, so when I got picked up October 7th, 1996, I was a very skinny young lad at that time. I didn't even do meth, but I was doing meth all weekend, and, I didn't do it. I tried it like a champ. I didn't like it, but I tried like a champ. I mean, I kept smoking. The pipe broke. I chewed up gum. I stuck it back together, so I keep going. I mean, I tried. I committed. I gave it all my all, you know? I did what I could. I didn't really like it, but, I mean, I went for it. You know, I went 2 feet in. Anyway, so that was Friday. So come Monday, I get picked up. You know, I'm doing this. And they look at me, and they say, you're going to die. You're going to die, and you're probably going to die in the backseat of our car, and we don't want that. So they took me to get breakfast, which was Del Taco. They took me to a drive-thru. I'm not kidding. They took me. So I ordered 11 soft tacos and a cherry Coke. Now, one of the side effects of meth, which I had not known because I was not much of a meth addict, but I had learned that weekend, you don't really eat. So I was almost sick thinking about it. So they gave me this big bag of food, and they're like, eat it. And I couldn't eat it. I took 1.5 down maybe, and I was going to puke on my – I just couldn't do it, man. It hurt too much to eat. Plus, I wasn't eating much anyway. And I had jaundice. I mean, I was the color of this tie almost. It was, you know, my liver was going. I was a few months away from dying. I didn't even know it. And I didn't know there was an option to not be dead. Anyway, so I thought, well, I better take this. I'm going to get hungry sooner or later. So I better take these tacos in with me. So I started stuffing them, right? Anyway, needless to say, stupid ass. They found the tacos. Everybody, you know, one person in that room was embarrassed, and it wasn't them. It was me, you know, as the tacos hit the floor. Blah. They said, you can eat them all right now, or we're going to have to throw them away. I almost puked again just thinking about eating. Oh, it was bad. So that was my introduction. That's my first day sober right there, right? Trying to sneak in tacos. Keister soft tacos. At least they were soft. And, So I get to this treatment center, I do the stuff, I come back out here, I get that job that's not so hot, but I needed it, and I start running to people, you know, people go there and hang out, a couple, you know, people that I knew from the past. See, now I'm locked up, I'm gone, nobody knows I'm out, nobody knows I'm going to be out anytime soon. That was kind of a gift, that was a little blessing that I got, because nobody knew that I got this option to go to a treatment center, nobody knew that I was released from the treatment center, you know, and...
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
So I got to lay low for a little, live with my grandmother. My grandmother, before she passed, lived in Palos Verdes, so I wouldn't live with her. She's the only family member that would take me. But anyway, you know, about 5-6 months in, people start discovering that I'm out and would like to re-up some former commitments and associations. And so I just went to my PO and I was very honest. See, one thing about, for anybody who's new or semi-new or hasn't figured it out, is Alcoholics Anonymous will teach you about honesty. And the thing is, we can work with honesty. We can't work with lies. We can't do it. If you tell me you don't want to drink, that you're pretty good today, I'm just going to believe you. I'm not going to sit you down and give you any kind of experience, strength, and hope story just to hear myself talk. But if you really want to drink and you're not telling me, what can I do? you can't walk up to anybody up on this panel and you tell them you're doing great, things are great, I'm going to go off and home tonight if that's not true. But if you come up and say, I'm thinking about drinking, you can have whatever, 57 years sober, I'm thinking about drinking today. We can deal with that. I can deal with that. I can talk to you about that. We can sit down and we can connect. We can go spend some time together. This is my wife is sitting over in the corner with our son. You know, we were on a young people's committee and we had a friend. We all went to hang out after one of our committee meetings. We all went to go get some coffee and go to a movie. She says she was fine. She said, I'm just going to go home. She got loaded and was found dead the next morning. Can't deal with that. I can't deal with you lying. I can't help. Nobody can. I'm not going to snatch you up and go, you fucking liar. You're going to the movies with us. We just don't do that. You know, you tell me you're good, I believe you. You tell me you want to get loaded, I believe you. And I'll sit and we'll talk and I'll change some plans. My wife will change plans. Most people are probably up on this panel will probably change their plans to help you out or bring you along. Nothing like getting taken hostage in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I had three people that took me hostage for a long time in AA. School teacher Kelly, dork. Leslie, dork. And Eric, dork. All of them dorks. Didn't like any of them. Didn't want anything to do with them except they would give me a ride home after a meeting. Then they would start taking me to coffee first. Son of a bitch. Now I got to go to coffee with them. And they're going to introduce me to their dork friends. You know? They did that. I had 3 years sober and still was convinced that I would eventually get loaded. I just didn't know. I just didn't think. I wanted to be sober, but I figured I'd screw something up. I'm going to screw it up, and it's going to happen. I remember sitting in a treatment center, the famous, look to your left, and look to your right, and those are the people who are going to drink. And they looked at me. He looked at me. I figured I just got voted off the island. I'm done. That's it. I'm not going to make it. I remember hearing, I spilled more than you drank. There's a fun one. But when you know you got like no days sober, you don't really have the witty responses that you learn later. If I could go back in time, I'd tell that fucking guy, if he didn't spill so much, you could've got here sooner. But you know what I do know? I know that the three gentlemen that told me that all got loaded. I know that all three of them got loaded, and I don't know where they're at today, but I know that in 16 years, or almost 16 years now, I haven't seen them again. You know? So I don't know what they're up to. I don't know what their sobriety status is today, or their freedom. I don't know. So I know that what I learned from that is how you treat a newcomer is probably pretty close to a reflecting of what your program is. And they weren't super sober men trying to give me a hard time or maybe you should drink some more and figure it out kind of message. No, they're just three shitty old men, didn't have a program, and they were probably being that kind of way to anybody else around them. I just didn't notice. I just noticed what they were telling me, you know. So I remember the expression, you know, how you treat it. Be nice to the newcomer. They might be your sponsor one day, you know. I've learned so much in Alcoholics Anonymous than I ever thought. You know, I really liked the young people thing. They didn't have young peoples in the desert. In fact, there was only three of us, you know. There's only three of us that I knew. Me, Cheech, and Sasha. Mary Helen's got 19 years sober. She stood up. She can testify. That was it. That was all there were. There was three of us back in the 90s. And we're all still sober. And supposedly. And there wasn't anything else. We just went to whatever meetings there were. You know, we hung out with each other. We went to conventions. We played spades all night long. You know, I didn't know that was like such a thing. That's just, I guess, how it is. But, you know, that's what you did. You know, you learn spades and dominoes probably because you're all convicts, you know. And so you just learn it. You know, that pinochle, you know. Apparently all prison games were old lady games too. You ever realize that? Lifers and my grandma, spades, pinochle, right? I don't understand what it is. I don't know what it is. So next time you're playing that, just my grandma plays too, that's cool. And but that's it, you play and you don't sleep and you just go and you roam. And I never heard of young people, I never heard of it. We just didn't have it. And I remember one time Sasha said, there's a young people convention up in Central California, let's go. And we just got in the car and we went. It was great, I had a good time, you know. And a few years back, some people started creating it out in the desert. And I got involved with it just because I thought it was good. I got sober at that age. But you know, one thing that I know that I wouldn't have gotten if I had just done young people's is I wouldn't have gotten any older, sober men. You know, I needed that because two things were relevant when I got sober. One, I didn't know how to be sober. Okay, I needed some help with that. Two, I also didn't know how to be a man. I needed some help with that. You know, so I was glad that I had some sober men in my life at that time that weren't just going to hang out with me and play cards and take off to goofy Vegas runs and do stuff like that, that was going to sit around and go to work, be good husbands, good be fathers, and all that stuff, because I needed to learn how that stuff, because I didn't know how to do that. I also didn't brush my teeth on a regular basis. I didn't know how to do laundry. Not that I didn't know how. I understand a machine. I could have looked at it. I just didn't know to do it. You know, my clothes were dirty. I was dirty. That's how I live my life. I needed to be told to do that stuff, shower every day. I couldn't get a job. Okay, my rap sheet was pretty ugly, and I couldn't get a job, so I would lie. I would lie, and then they would find out usually around the 30-day mark, and then they would let me know that they found out, and then they would fire me. And that's how I live my life. And it took a few years of sobriety before I went back to the judge, and I said, I can't get a job. I can't get one. Nobody wants to hire me. And you know why. You said all that shit. And so he dropped everything to a misdemeanor. And he said, because you were 17 when you got arrested, we can close it. And it went away. You know, and I've been able to get... I didn't go get some great job like, ha ha ha, my qualifications are all cleared up. No, I still just had a GED, you know. But I got an okay job that I was able to keep, and I learned how to show up and do that. And after that job was a little bit better of a job. And after that was a little bit better and a little bit better. And now I have a pretty good job today that I really enjoy and I really love. And I hope to do that, this or something like this, you know, for the rest of my life or until I win the lottery, whichever comes first. I don't know how I got there. It's funny because I don't do anything that normal people don't do automatically. And yet they don't get any praise for doing it. I get all kinds of praise. It's ridiculous. I just don't drink and don't use. And then I try not to steal shit. I know a few people from when I was a kid that go to church. They're nice people, and they do, that's what they do. And they teach their kids to do that stuff. And that's it. That's just their life. I got like 10,000 friends now, and I can go to anybody for anything, and I got a support group, and people will clap. I haven't had a drink in, oh, shit. It's crazy. It makes no sense. All I'm doing is trying to act like society we're supposed to act, which is not a menace, and all of a sudden we get all this praise. It's nice, you know. It doesn't make any sense, but it's real nice. I remember the first time, I don't know how much time I have left. Somebody's going to have to tell me. 8:37, probably not much longer. And I got taken to a benefit for this treatment center that I went to, the ABC Club. And it was put on by the Fords, Mr. and Mrs. Ford, former president of the United States, Gerald Ford, and his wife, the first lady, Mrs. Ford. And I thought, that's nice of them. They're going to give some plaque and some cash that is raised up. This other person who had money said, you should go because you went to that treatment center. I'll pay for your plate. And I went. So now I'm sitting at the table with Mr. and Mrs. Ford. Like this close. I'm sitting that close to them at this dinner. Okay. Now, I haven't gone to see that judge yet. This is before that moment. I'm sitting there going, oh, shit. I don't think I'm supposed to get this close. That guy's got a gun. That guy's got a gun, right? They're going to shoot me when they find out, right? I'm on a list. Oh, crap, right? They didn't know how. They didn't give a shit. Everybody in that room was probably similar to my, you know, self. And, you know, anyway, I got that taken care of, and years later, and I was able to meet them again and stuff like that. And that's crazy. I was telling somebody the other day, I went to this thing just because of work. I went to this thing, and I sat at a table, and I was almost just like a host, and I was just supposed to talk and or not talk. It was depending on the people at the table, and ask a question, answer it, or just schmooze and blah, blah, blah. And these are people like, yeah, well, you know, I first made my first $1 billion. And it's like, holy shit, right? Like, I'm a hundredaire, right? I'm a hundredaire, right? Right? These people are like, my first time, I was like, holy crap, dude. And I'm sitting there talking, everything's great, and we're just talking and shooting this. And that's just because I'm sober, just because I haven't taken a drink, that's why I'm there. I have done nothing really to deserve that. I didn't invent something. I didn't save a life. I didn't, nothing. I haven't been to outer space. I don't know why E equals MC squared. I don't know reason I should be with these people, but yet I am because I just don't drink and I don't use. I talk honestly about the program. I give the program the respect it deserves. And that's, you know, I want to wrap up with that about the respect that Alcoholics Anonymous deserves. You know, it's a simple program. If you haven't heard it or you haven't been paying attention like I was in the first few almost year of sobriety, you go to meetings, You get a sponsor, and you work the 12 steps. That's the program, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. The book says that we have meetings so that people who need to find us can find us, so that we can then tell them about the 12 steps. They're read at every meeting. If you haven't paid attention, it's okay. They will read them at the next one. It's usually the first 12, okay? Then there's another 12, but don't worry. Just start with the first 12. Then there's actually another set of 12s. But anyways, the first set of 12s, that's it. That's the program, you know? I can't drink. My life's a mess. That's usually kind of easy to get, you know? And if you don't think it is, sit around for a while and tell people, I don't think I'm powerless. I don't think my life's that unmanageable. That's cool, man. Feel that way. Think that way. Just tell us. And we'll ask you some questions. We'll sit around and talk. Maybe you're right. Book says there's at least one person who has done the right about face, and we took our hat off to him. If it didn't happen, we wouldn't have put it in the book. So maybe you're number two. Tell us. I'd love to meet you. I would. Go down in history. That's what it is. That's what we do. How come I can go out there and I can do the stuff I did? Let's just take the standard typical alcoholic. You get a DUI, they give you a court card. Just go to these. It's usually what? 5, 3, 7, 9, depending on what number of DUI you're on. You go in, the secretary signs it, gives it back to the end. You get it filled up, you give it to the judge, maybe do some classes, and that's it. You don't go to jail. What the hell? If I steal shit, I don't go to some ICE used to steal shit meeting, sign a card, and then, no, if I am violent, I don't go to some don't beat people up anymore meeting where the secretary, none of that. No other messed up social problem person has this that we have. Why is that? You know? And it's because of what the people before us have done. The people before us have come in here, they've done these 12 things, they've turned their lives around. They've shown society that we can be redeemed, we can be healed, we can go out there and be productive, we can be good men, good women, good mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, all that stuff. And so therefore, the people before us have given us credibility. I have credibility in the court system today because of the men before me, you know, because of the women before me. And so I need to know what that is so that I don't screw it up. I don't want to screw it up. I don't want to act like some ass, because let me tell you, sometimes I want to be just an asshole. Like I said, I'm a hundredaire, so that means there's stuff out there I want. I want stuff, and I can steal it. I know I can. It's easy. I could have taken the 46-inch TV last night from that place. I could have. I could have just put on some thing, and I just got to move it over here because they want to make sure. And just what? Oh, sure, he's an AA. He's telling the truth. It's the way it is, and it's like that anywhere you go, but I can't do that. Why? Because someone's going to see that. And someone's going to say, that son of a bitch from Alcoholics Anonymous straight up stole the TV. He was here for being a speaker. They actually think that dude has something worth saying. Oh, this place is stupid. I ain't never coming. You know what I mean? That's just how it works. I had never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous until I really got there. And the guy in H&I, Randy, who got me out of my sentence and to go to the ABC Club, was a cool dude. And he was my example. He's my Eskimo. And a few years later, he got loaded. But he did what he did. He had credibility with me. He went and he said, "That's just kind of cool. I used to shoot dope and all this stuff." And you know, now I don't. It's been 7 years. And I thought, well, that's kind of cool, man. You used to do that. I used to do that. All right, you don't. Well, you're cool. I'll listen to what you have to say, you know. And that's it. That's who we are today. To a lot of people, there's people out there who don't know what Alcoholics Anonymous is, don't know what any other Anonymouses are, don't know what the 12 steps are, and you might be their first example. And it's important for me to know that in my day-to-day life because I might be that example. I met a dude at the bank one day, and he was sitting in front of me to cash his check, and he goes, "Oh, it's Friday. I'm going to get drunk tonight." I was like, "Cool, man. Good for you, right? Oh, shit. I guess that's what you do." And he goes, "I parked my car at home, going down to the 19th hole, getting drunk. Ah, great. Good for you. All right, all right." So on Wednesday, when I'm walking into the AA meeting, he comes walking out with his scorecard. Yeah. Welcome. Remember me from the bank? I wasn't rude to him. I wasn't anything. All right. Hey, man, good for you, man. Have a blast. That's responsible. Park your car. Good man. Good man. I was just talking to being nice. But guess what? We almost ran into each other at that door, you know, and he didn't stick around too much longer after his court card was signed out. But I realized that I didn't even know that I was that guy's first introduction into the meetings there, maybe even Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was just polite to him. Good job, man. Have fun. Whatever, right? If I could, I would, you know. And I remember that. So, you know, I like to know about Alcoholics Anonymous, the history of AA, all that kind of stuff. And because it reminds me of how I need to act, what I need to do in the future. You know, I've met my wife in Alcoholics Anonymous. Again, that's my son. He's 5 months old. And, you know, it's just a trip, man. I used to just think that I was going to die one day and then my grandmother would ID me. You know, I'd be a John Doe toe tag until she ID'd me, if she would. You know, I knew no other family member at the time would have. And I've overshot the mark on what I wanted out of this. You know, I used to think I'd screw it up. I wouldn't buy furniture. My grandmother drove out at 3 years sober. She drove out from Palos Verdes to Palm Desert, bought me a mattress because I knew she found I was sleeping on the floor. Because I figured I was going to get loaded. And when it's time to get loaded, time for possessions is just going to get in the way, man. We got to go. So she brought it out. And when she left, I called the ABC Club and I said, hey, man, you guys need a bed. I got a new one. And then I had them come pick it up. And then they took it. And I went back to sleeping on the floor because I didn't think I would make it. I just didn't think I would. I went to meetings every day. I just did what I was told to do, but I didn't think I would make it, you know? And that's how I live. But all of a sudden, I started getting into a little bit more of like, what is this? Where do we come from, you know? And this guy said, there's a generation when things are usually spawned, like Alcoholics Anonymous, religion, things like that. And usually the generations after them take this way more serious and way more just nuts than the people originally did. And I think that's pretty true. You know, I think today in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think we're a little bit more nuts about, well, you gotta do this. There's some shit you gotta do around here to stay around here and all that. And it's like, oh, okay, whoa. I wouldn't have heard any of that, you know. And I think we get a little bit more freaked out on people. We jump down their throat. And I've done it myself, you know. We just get caught up in that, like, all right, man, you need to get a sponsor, work a step, stick with a man, no relationships. You need to don't change nothing for the first year. But you want me to stop drinking? That's the biggest thing I could possibly change. You know? And I think we just need to remember what this is. You know, this is a spiritual experience. You know, we need to get people down into the book. And what opened my eyes the most about how to be a newcomer and how this works is that near the end of the book, of the first 164, is when they're kind of wrapping up a little bit. Very quickly, Bill, Bob, and member number 3, another Bill. You know, and it talked about, you know, Bill had about 6 months sober when Bob stopped drinking, right? It's December something, and Bob's got June 10th. Then they go and get Bill, and they meet Bill in a hospital. They just go out to hospitals and meet people who are drunks and shaking and stuff like that, and they're talking to him, and the Bill thinks, man, I got this. And then within a few days, he wants to go out and carry the message. And it says that at the end of June, yada, yada, yada. I thought, at the end of June, that means that Bill had like 6 months. Bob had like 2.5 weeks, maybe 2. And this dude had 3 days, and they were out just getting newcomers. You know, now we feel like maybe you should have a year. You really should just really take some you time. You know, really find out who you are. You know, really just take a good comprehensive step. Do it twice. Get a good bachelor's degree in the 12 steps. Don't get a sponsor who has anything less than 5 years of sobriety. Blah, 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 blah. Some people can't fathom 5 years, you know. So if you're new, if you've got 3 days, 5 days, 6 days, you saw a couple people stand up. Everybody in here has seen at least, other than 2 people, one person who has less time than them, which means that you can help that person out a little bit. How does somebody with 1 day get to 3 days? It's easy to go from 15 years to 16 years. I've been doing it this last year. It's been a breeze. Okay? It has been. I just did the same shit I did the first 14. But how do you go from 1 day to 5 days, because that's the hard time. That's the shaky time. That's the pain time. That's the crap in your pants time. How do you do that? How do you do that when you're not locked up somewhere? You know, those people need you. And you can say, man, I got through it. I just got through it, man. On day 8, I was able to sleep. On day 11, I was able to start eating food. You know, little milestones that we get here. And we're gonna love you, and we're gonna accept you, and you may drink again, and it's cool, man. We're fish out of water. That's what we do. Don't be ashamed if you're a relapser. Don't be ashamed if you do. That's who we are. We're alcoholics. Some of us are and addicts. And that's what we do. We drink and we use. We drink and we use. We drink and we use. And we're asking you to do something that's different. We're asking you to do something that's not normal and not natural for yourself. And if you stumble, it's cool, man. Some of us stumble. You know, it's going to be all right. We're going to teach you how to get through it. And everything that I've ever done in my past that was shameful, embarrassing, never going to tell nobody, taking it to the grave, I've shared, and it's all become experience, strength, and hope. I've sat in meetings, and I've heard someone say, man, I ain't ever gonna, psh, can't do it. I don't think I can ever just forgive myself for yada, yada, yada. I did yada, yada, yada. I did it twice, you know? And I can go up and I can sit down and say, man, I relate to that. I did this. This is what I did. And it's worked for me. I've been able to stay sober even because of that, you know? And all of a sudden, that big pile of shame turned into experience. It helped someone else. And sickly enough, almost become proud of it, you know? Almost become proud of my hurdles, you know? And a man once said that success is not what you achieve, it's what you overcome, you know? And so that means there's a lot of things that we can overcome and a lot of success that people in the rooms can have. And if you don't put those hurdles out there, you can't overcome them and you can't help anybody else come after you, because that's what this is all about. It's one alcoholic talking to another. It's the 12th step. If you're not doing it, you've stopped at 11. This is a 12-step program. Carry the message to the alcoholic who's still sick. You got to get out there, talk to them, just tell your story. And in the 12 and 12, when it talks about the 4-step, it says we do it kind of clearly and easily, something like that. But it says without exhibitionism. And I didn't know what that meant at first. So what do? I take off the leather chaps, no ball gag, right? What does that mean? It means I don't have to get into the crazy, gory stuff. You know, we like to do that sometimes, especially young people. We love to prove ourselves. That little thing that you read there goes, well, they weren't so bad, but they got sober anyway. It's like, you motherfucker, man, let me tell you the shit I did. I want to tell you every gory detail. But that's not what it is. I don't talk about that stuff. Piles of cocaine and hookers and everybody had a gun and that's not what it's about. It's how did I feel? Why did I drink? What was I willing to do to drink? And what was it like not drinking? You know, that's what we're here about. That's what we talk about. So, you know, if you're new here, you can share that. If you hadn't had a drink today, you have that experience, you know? You have that experience about what it's like not to drink today, and you can share that with someone else. And you can share it with someone with more time than you, who might be thinking about drinking, might be thinking about making this their last meeting, you know? So be out there. Tell people what's going on with you, because that's when this happens. You know, that's when this happens. Thank you.
Hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.